And welcome once again to Church Ephesians 6:4. And the title of this week's article is, So, how are you enjoying your retirement? The most common question I get from folks these days is, are you enjoying your retirement? The second most common question is, what are you doing in retirement? In answering the questions, I've come to realize that my response is often one that clearly disappoints the inquirer. I know I'm speaking to some of you out there, and I appreciate you trying to hide it, but you haven't been able to completely control what I see on your face and in your eyes. You see, I believe there is a generally held expectation among middle and upper middle class Americans that when you retire, you have the following experiences, which all lead to a life of happiness and joy. Number one, you no longer work or do anything that may be demanding on your mind or body. Number two, your time is always free because you're not bound to a schedule. Number three, money is no longer a concern. Four, you travel extensively and enjoy the food and cultures of the world. And five, you do fun things that you can share with everyone else. However, for me and my wife, our reality is, one, I've started a new ministry that keeps me busy. Okay, not crazy busy, but it causes me to still do a kind of work. Number two, I have a schedule for every day. This is important to me because for those who have worked with me over the years, remember when I did work, I always needed to make it a big day. In other words, I still want to be productive. Three, while we are blessed to not have to work for a company or institution, I still have to be wise with the management of our money, lest we find ourselves coming up short in our finances. Four, we don't travel. Why? Because my wife and I make decisions based on the risk versus reward system. For example, if we consider making a trip to Europe, we will evaluate the possibility of long lines at the airport. Think about that back pain that comes from excessive standing. The 8 to 10 hour flight. Think about those tiny seats. The bad behavior of people. Think about me losing my mind. And again, the 8 to 10 hours it will take. Think about that bathroom that is relatively smaller than my bladder. I could go on to the possibility of other unpleasant challenges along the way, but you get the gist. Typically, when we weigh all of these things together, we become fonder of our home and go nowhere. Okay, I see you shaking your head. And five, we don't do the kinds of things that other people who call fun or extraordinary things. In fact, it is at that point in our lives, and I think for most retired 67-year-old people, that you spend a good bit of time managing injuries. Try sharing that with everyone and getting likes. Whether listening to my answer in person or simply reading this article, I think many are secretly thinking that you feel kind of bad for us because you think we're missing out or that our name should be changed to Mr. and Mrs. Dull. But let's look at life through a biblical lens for a minute. Ecclesiastes was written by Solomon, the wisest man in the world. You may recall that he took time to investigate the true meaning of life and explored the world in every possible way a person could. Pastor Alistair Begg writes, "The first 8 verses of Ecclesiastes 3 give us a description of the cycle of life. And it has been said, rather cynically, that these verses contain 28 statements, 14 pluses and 14 minuses, that add up to nothing at all. Such a perspective represents the struggle that many have in trying to make sense of the cyclical nature of life in this world without giving in to pessimism." But does that change in retirement? Does it get better? No, we aren't in control of our lives in retirement any more than we were before retirement. God has not changed, and neither has our proper understanding of what life is about. It is true, life is short, and the experiences that you will have will soon be gone. And sadly, most people choose to fill their days with activities that allow our minds to be distracted away from the truth of the matter. But I promise you that you do not need to chase things or do things that will make you feel more significant than Ecclesiastes may have made you feel. My grandson has been influenced by the world we live in through the constant barrage of media in our lives. He spent several months of hard thinking, trying to figure out what talent he had that would result in him one day becoming excellent or even famous. I think that this represented good old American ambition. However, good old American ambition is not necessarily good old biblical ambition. We must read Solomon's thoughts at the end of Ecclesiastes to get to the most critical point. After Solomon's pursuit and assessment of the meaning of life, he did not conclude that we are to do nothing because nothing matters, but said this, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." Ecclesiastes 12:13. So what did Paul have to say about ambition? He writes that his ambition was to preach the gospel. He also said this in 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. He said, "Aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we have instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one." This is antithetical to what the world wants you to do. The world says you need to draw attention to yourself, become a person of influence, or be likable among people. It says, "Look at me, because I'm doing something special, or I'm showing some special talent that I have." But God says your life is to be one of quiet obedience to God's commandments and pursuit of a close walk with Jesus Christ, setting your mind on heavenly things because our citizenship is not here, but in heaven. What? Is that it? If you just said that in your mind, there is something wrong with your view of the Christian life. It may indicate that you have a very immature view of what it means to walk with the Lord and the greatest calling that we have ever been given. There is nothing greater in this world to pursue, and it will require all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Back to Alistair Begg's devotion, he says, "Your significance and security do not come from your ability to control your life. Whatever you do, the seasons will pass, and one day, so will you. Rather, whatever season you are in, you find true peace by knowing and loving Him who rules over all of history. In whatever remains of today, allow yourself to enjoy all that God in His sovereignty brings into your life. Seek to obey Him in those things, and rest easy in Him who orders every season for your good and His glory." So as far as our retirement is concerned, we're doing just fine, and actually enjoying the pursuit of the simple yet profoundly important things that God calls every Christian to do in retirement and before retirement. Post-retirement, that's heaven, and we want to be ready. How about you? What are you pursuing? What are you teaching your children about life by your example? Before I go, I wanted to make you aware of a new recording that I've done called Duties of Parents. Duties of Parents was written by the great pastor J.C. Ryle, and it'll be a blessing to you. There are 9 episodes, each less than 10 minutes long. Listen whenever it's convenient. The link to the podcast is here and in the email for this week. You may also want to peruse the entire set of recordings on the Cherish Ephesians 6:4 channel. There are now 23 separate recordings of tracks, booklets, and books that I handpick because I know we all need these for the Christian life. That link is also in this article below and on the email for this week. See you next time, and thanks for listening.